Hello and welcome to the second series of ETY podcast, Voices from the World of Work. I am Bianca Luna Fabris, Communications Officer at the ETY, and I am the host for this season. Today, I will be joined by Senior Researcher Paula Franklin from the Health, Safety and Working Conditions Unit. Before getting to the questions, let me just tell you a little bit more about Paula. Paula holds a PhD in sociology from the University of Surrey and a postdoc from the University of Durham. In addition to her work at the ETY, Paula is also a member of the WHO Europe Scientific Advisory Board. Thank you so much, Paula, for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Bianca. I'm very happy to be discussing with you this very important issue of occupational safety and health in the healthcare sector.
This episode will be centered mainly around Paula's recently published policy brief on the effects of COVID-19 in the healthcare sector. And you can find such policy brief at etui.org/publications. Paula, perhaps could you shed some light on why you decided to write this piece?
Well, it was during the lockdown in the spring in Brussels when I kept clapping hands at 8 o'clock in the evening on my balcony as a display of solidarity. With the healthcare workers, while also following the rolling coverage of the working conditions of health workers and the reports of them getting ill and even dying. And it really made me wonder how we can be in this situation and fail in protecting the workers who are the essential workers for our society every day, not only during the pandemic. And this is what prompted the brief analysis of occupational safety and health and the working conditions more broadly in the healthcare sector.
Could you perhaps tell us what are the main takeaways of your publication?
Well, first of all, it's important that all health workers have health and safety protection and decent working conditions. So this includes the many different occupational groups that work at hospitals, but also in the communities. The second point is that it's really important to acknowledge the psychosocial risks of health and care work and strengthen the prevention of these risks. And finally, most importantly, the value of care work and the workforce that is mostly women should be fully acknowledged.
If you don't mind me asking a possibly banal question, but why were the healthcare workers in the healthcare sector so exposed?
Well, there are many reasons for this. Firstly, the pandemic was not unexpected. The global health security monitoring was showing that it was basically just a matter of time for this type of pandemic to happen. We also knew at the same time that most public health systems were not prepared for such pandemic. And in terms of preparedness, they would not have the required capacity of equipment, hospital beds and staff in terms of numbers and the relevant and up-to-date skills. So we can clearly see here the impact of this investment into health and social care economy over the past decade or more. So you see, health is a political choice, and the choices that had been made in the run-up to the pandemic have a huge impact now on the health and safety of the workers and the working conditions.
Can you perhaps give us an example of this?
So for example, there's a lack of health workers or staff shortages, which means that those who work will have to do long shifts. They are under enormous time pressure and they do not have enough time off from work to recuperate. There has also been, of course, a lack of suitable personal protective equipment, the PPE, which is exposing the workers to infection by the novel coronavirus. And this also creates anxiety about the infection and infecting other peoples, including family members. So basically, the health workers have had to compensate for the shortcomings of the health system through their own individual adjustments. And this has sometimes led to the detriment of their own health and even their lives.
So what are the consequences of poor working conditions for the workers in this sector?
Well, it's a specific concept when we talk about work organization, and it's referring to how work is organized. So how different tasks need to be performed and how these tasks are allocated to workers. It's about working times, it's about work-life balance, the pace of work, But also the skills and the opportunities for professional development. So these are all parts of the how you organize work. It also means that people who are performing the tasks at work get to participate in the planning of their work, as well as the occupational safety and health risk assessments from their viewpoints, and the formulation of the risk and hazard prevention plans. So that the actual prevention of all these risks at work is matching the lived reality of the workers. So it's about participating, the workers participating in the planning and the development of their work tasks and the health and safety as well. Now, poor work organization then is known by research that it causes injuries and illnesses. So for example, poor work organization increases the level of the psychosocial risks. It arises, for example, from understaffing, so not enough staff, excessive overtime, work overload, again, following if you don't have enough people at work, time pressure, there could be a lack of training for the tasks that need to be performed. It could lead into a low number of rest breaks and days away from work. So essentially, the workers have very low control of work and the pace of work.
Mm-hmm.
And these aspects that I've just described as the poor work organization, these are very evident in the healthcare sector during COVID-19. And this poor work organization, so all the time pressures and not enough staff, it increases the risk of infection by the virus, but also exacerbates the risk of poor mental health outcome for workers. And it's also linked to lower quality of patient care.
Picking up on what you were saying just right now on mental health, we were having a chat before recording the podcast on psychosocial risks. Could you perhaps just elaborate and just tell us what they are and why the workers in this sector are so heavily exposed?
Yes, exactly. So psychosocial risks, these are a very prominent type of risks for health workers. There is plenty of research on it. They're well documented, and it's also very clear that they there are more of these risks during disease outbreaks. And during the COVID-19 pandemic, a shortage of staff in many places and the resources, so hospital beds and equipment, for example, and the increasing social tensions have resulted in more violence against health workers, for example. So there's been harassment, threats and aggression against health workers. So this is one. Another aspect of the psychosocial risk related to harassment is stigmatization, which we can see, for example, in the media or the sort of kind of common discourse that goes, where you can accuse workers for spreading the virus in the community.
Sorry, I'm just trying to get my head around this. So what you're saying is that patients and their families were basically harassing healthcare workers?
Absolutely. So these are the people who go to work risking their own health to care for others, and then they will be harassed outside and also accused for perhaps spreading the virus, which is the exact opposite of the reality, because it is the workers who are not protected. They don't have the PPE, the lack of good work organization results in situations that increase the risk of infection. So it's not the individual worker. It is the system within which the worker is placed and conducts the work that causes the risks and increases the risks. Now, in terms of what the psychosocial risks are and how we see them, let's say, unfolding during the pandemic, it's also we can see long working hours, shift work, and high workload. This can obviously lead to fatigue, occupational burnouts, and the increased psychological distress or even declining mental health. So this is all well documented now. Even the protective equipment, the PPE, can be a source of physical strain. So there is dehydration that links to it, heat and exhaustion. And this can also lead to work-related stress and a different kind of musculoskeletal disorders. There's also the constant states of awareness, and you have to be very vigilant when you are working in the COVID wards. That's in regards to infection control and different procedures and the repetitive nature of these procedures and the work that you need to follow. And this can be very draining. So it's hour after hour, day after day, the repetition. Of course, there is the emotional side in terms of witnessing a large number of patients who are suffering and dying. You are communicating with and comforting the relatives. You're worrying about perhaps your own health and the health of your colleagues, the health of your family, or in some instances, you need to keep distance from your family when you're working at providing healthcare. So these are all parts of the psychosocial risks that then impact the well-being and the health of the workers.
In your policy brief, you mentioned the gendered aspect of psychosocial risk. Why is this so? And could you perhaps just explain to us a little bit more what you mean by this?
Especially nursing staff are most likely to be exposed to offensive behaviors. So this includes sexual harassment and violence and gender-based violence. And just to highlight that in Europe, 89% of nurses are women. So this is really a gender equality or gender inequality repeated in the world of work, and it's part of the issues that we need to then really look at and tackle and change in terms of the broader measures when we move forward from the pandemic.
In your paper, you also mentioned that gender is completely lacking from OSH legislation. Could you perhaps tell us why is this so?
Certainly. Well, we know that there is occupational segregation. So this means that there is a gender division to different sectors, and also the segregation of different roles and tasks within the sectors as well. So you can think of, for example, the lack of women in leading roles. So we have between sectors and within sectors segregation. Now, this segregation results in different working conditions for women and men, which also means that women and men can be exposed to different types of occupational risks. So therefore, it's really important that you acknowledge the gender perspective and the difference so that you can develop the prevention of the risks accordingly, so according to the reality of the workers. Another important issue is that there is the musculoskeletal disorders, another long word, psychosocial risks and musculoskeletal disorders, yes. So these are particularly affecting the working women in all European countries. And neither of these major issues, the psychosocial risks or the musculoskeletal disorders that impact women's health at work, is well, let alone fully recognized or compensated. So we know that these exist. These are the ways that the work impacts particularly women's health. But the prevention measures and the recognition and compensations are not matching the situation.
Paula, if you don't mind very slightly changing focus. So we are seeing now a very rapid surge in cases of COVID positive patients around the globe, and especially in Europe. We are 7 months in the pandemic. Can we see some kind of change for the better?
Well, yes and no. Based on the reports, there is a better availability of the PPE in the EU countries, and also medical equipment. So this is something that has moved forward since the spring. We have the public health preventative measures, so hand washing, social distancing, face masks and contract tracing. So these all contribute to reduce the burden on health workers, and especially the workers in hospitals. So just to say that let's all keep doing this so that the amount and the pace of work will be more manageable. Mm-hmm. However, we do know just this morning the International Council of Nursing was raising the alarm that there are many, many staff members who are under enormous pressure in Europe at the moment because of the COVID second wave. So this is a reality. Now, the root causes of the problems in the healthcare sector cannot be resolved within this timeline, so basically between the first and the second wave of COVID. However, there are these transformative changes that will need to start, like, let's say, yesterday. Otherwise, the health and care workers and the patients, or prospectively any of us, will not be safe. So in terms of the short-term measures, it's really important to have the PPE available so that it's also well-suited to the situations where it is used. And also to have the capacity to test the workforce, healthcare workforce and social care, the community and hospital care workforce for the virus. It's important to think about the prevention of violence and harassment and workplace and in the commute to work as well, and develop the measures to mitigate the psychological side or the impact on the workers. This includes also supporting work-life balance. Yeah. and thinking how this can be addressed. It's important to provide information and guidance, of course, for safety and health in this situation, and appropriate training for staff members. The information changes, the science is advancing, so this is something that is important. But also to remember that the communication should be a two-way communication. So also listen to the workers, include them into the decision-making and the planning. Now, another way in terms of short-term how we can prevent different types of risks is to treat COVID-19 as an occupational disease. So this means that there is an economic safety net for those workers who fall ill. And it also means that the workers can stay at home when they are ill and not experience a catastrophic loss of income. And then you should have, of course, representation of trade unions, gender-balanced trade union representation into the governance and decision-making structures, because they really know what is needed, what is actually happening in the field.
And what about more like structural type of reforms?
It's really important to recognize finally the real value of the health and care economy. So this means rethinking all aspects of work organization, including the addressing of staff shortages, as well as the working and employment conditions, such as precarious contracting practices and salaries. So these are also important in terms of occupational safety and health. And in 2021, we do need to include a clear gender perspective into the EU occupational safety and health strategy that is up and coming, and develop legislation on the psychosocial risks and musculoskeletal disorders. So just to really wrap it up and in brief, to say that it's crucially important to invest in the health and care economy, and particularly the workforce, as they are the most valuable resource there is.
I'm afraid that we have to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Paula, for being our guest today. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Bianca. It was a pleasure talking with you, and stay safe.
Thank you so much for listening this far, and please watch out for the next episodes of ETY Podcast, Voices from the World of Work.